Welcome to the official Barclays Premier League podcast, brought to you by Barclays.
Hello, I'm Dave Farrar, and welcome to you wherever you are in the world. The transfer window is now shut, and the world's most expensive player bids farewell to North London.
It was very hard saying goodbye to everybody at Tottenham. I had a great 6 years there. I had obviously some tough times and some great times, so I wish them all the best this year, and hopefully they can get into the Champions League.
So as Bale leaves, Mesut Ozil arrives at the Emirates. Whoever doubted Wenger?
You always want more quality. We are working very hard. We'll be there, don't worry.
And Liverpool toast Bill Shankly by beating their arch rivals.
These are the big games that we wanted to be winning this year. We drew too many last year, and I think you see the togetherness and the spirit in the team.
I'm joined by former West Ham and Charlton manager Alan Kirbishley to look back on all the weekend's action. We speak to ex-Liverpool boss Roy Evans about what was an emotional afternoon at Anfield on Sunday, and we talk to the West Brom defender Stephen Reid about the new arrivals at the Hawthorns. Plus, European football expert Gabriele Marcotti joins us to discuss all the other last-minute comings and goings in the transfer window. So, Alan, the transfer window finally closed on Monday night. It was another frenetic final day of activity. Fellaini being done very, very late. What was the best move of the day for you?
Well, I think the Everton signings in the end. We knew that Fellaini was going to go, but they made sure that they got the right prices for the players they were bringing in. I think bringing in McCarthy, Gareth Barry, vastly experienced, and getting Lukaku, I think, three players that want to go to Everton and be at Everton, and getting rid of one that didn't want to be there.
And as a manager, what does it feel like this morning after transfer deadline?
Well, it's international break as well, so I wouldn't be surprised if most of the managers now are going to take 4 or 5 days rest, because they've been at it all summer with this window. They've had the first three games, and now no one can be bought, no one can be sold, and there's no one to train because they're all playing off on international duty. So most of the managers will be away now on a break.
What, so the season's only, 3 match days old and all the managers going on holiday already? But that's the way of things, I guess, in the crazy world of football. There were some huge deals, of course, between the English top flight and the continent. And to give us a bit more insight into them, we're joined by the Times newspaper's European football correspondent, Gabriele Marcotti. Hi, Gab, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
Now, let's get straight into arguably the biggest deal of deadline day, certainly in this country. Arsenal agreeing a club record fee of £42.4 million for Mesut Ozil from Real Madrid. Do you see him lighting up the Barclays Premier League?
I think certainly in terms of ability, if you look back over the past few years and you ask yourself how many players came to the Barclays Premier League really at the top of their careers from the top European side, it's not a long list. A lot of the big stars in the Barclays Premier League are people who perhaps came younger and then became big stars here in England. So I think it makes it a bit different. He certainly has a skill set. Some people will point out that maybe Arsenal would have been best served in buying a striker, and that certainly the type of bidding they made indicated that that was their priority. But at the end, I think as a manager, you know, you also have to have the courage to take those opportunities and find the best player available when he becomes available.
And Arsene Wenger has also signed the 27-year-old goalkeeper Emiliano Viviano from Palermo. Huge Fiorentina fan, of course, was there on loan last year and fairly highly rated as well. Do you see him being the number one eventually there?
I'm sure that Wenger will give him a chance to compete for the number one spot. I know Viviano a little bit. He is somebody who just wants a chance to compete. Bitterly disappointed that Fiorentina didn't keep him around. But I know he wouldn't have come if he hadn't at least been given assurances that he would have a chance to displace Szczesny.
And what about the Barclays Premier League's biggest ever export, Gareth Bale? Let's talk about a player who's gone out rather than one who's come in. At the end of the saga, finally, when he was presented at Real Madrid on Monday for a world record €100 million, is he going to be Ronaldo? Is he going to be Kaká? What do you think of him at Real?
I don't know. I think about Gareth Bale is, and he showed it already, I think he's quite clever. I mean, he came in and, you know, he said he's deferring to Cristiano. He shows a lot of humility. I think that's why the current manager, Carlo Ancelotti, would acquiesce to having him on board, even though on paper, you know, he's not somebody who feels an immediate need. It's precisely Bale's work rate and professionalism that make the club think that he can be an asset. Could they have spent that money in a different way, perhaps a better way? I certainly think so.
Gabriel, Man United, they went after Fabregas and went after Herrera. What do you think's going on there? Why didn't they secure one of them players?
And Alan, as you've said, of course, before that, they went after Thiago Alcantara as well before he signed for Bayern. Obviously, you know, when people deal in transfers, they deal, you know, with certain agents, certain intermediaries, and it takes experience. And obviously last year, Gil was there as a chief executive, perhaps the most respected executive in the English game at the time, and Sir Alex Ferguson, you know, and they're replaced by Moyes and Ed Woodward, who perhaps don't have the same networks, the same level of experience. Personally, I felt they were led down a garden path with regard to Cesc Fabregas, and they moved way too late for Ander Herrera, you know, simply because somebody has a release clause doesn't mean you can just come in and grab him and him willingly going, especially if he feels loyalty towards the club that he's at. I think they very much misread that. And on Fellaini as well, of course, he had a release clause of, what, £23.5 million? They could have had him earlier in the summer. Moyes certainly knows all about him. And instead, they ended up, as a result of some of these mistakes, paying £4 million more than they would have otherwise. Remember, as you know, he's somebody who's taking over at a new club. He's got huge decisions to make. He's on his major preseason tours. It has to be a team effort. He has to rely on other people at the club, like the chief executive, like people at that level, to make this happen. What we've saw here is collective failure to move as well as you'd expect United to move. Remember, in years past, Sir Alex generally always got his transfer business done early, which is generally the right thing to do if you can.
The role that perhaps Alex Ferguson's going to play when he comes back is probably there, you know, in terms of transfer dealings and opening doors and making the meets.
No question about that. And remember, too, you know, it's not as if Sir Alex decided to, oh, well, I'm going to hand over the keys and go on a long golfing holiday. Of course, he had surgery as well and, you know, was probably also a bit wary of casting a shadow over Moyes. I'm not sure, but it's pretty obvious that they need to revise what they do internally, how they do it, and see if that's the best possible way.
Yeah, the key to a sporting director with loads of contacts, you could see that with the massive business Newcastle did yesterday in the on transfer deadline day. Now, Liverpool brought in Victor Moses plus Thiago Ilori and Mamadou Sakho for a combined £25 million. Gav Suarez stays put as well. That's good business, isn't it, from Brendan Rodgers?
Well, I think Sakho is a good bit of business, especially because, as I understand it, he specifically asked to go because he wanted regular playing time. He wasn't happy. You know, he said, I'm 23 years old. I want to play every week. I want to be the best player I can be. I'm not happy just being here at Paris Saint-Germain, you know, collecting millions and lots of winner's medals because I'm on a very rich side. And then I think that shows a great attitude from the guy. And Moses could be his business. Suarez, if Rodgers has a plan to use him and Sturridge together, and if that plan worked. Otherwise, he may well go back and say, well, you know, maybe I would have rather taken the money for him. I think time will tell.
And just finally, Gab, I know that you love transfer deadline day. I remember talking to you a couple of years ago, and you enjoy all the comings and goings and all of that sort of stuff. Who's your tip to be the biggest star, the best signing, if you like, from deadline day yesterday?
A guy I really, really like, and I'm so glad he's back in the Barclays Premier League, is James McCarthy, who, of course, joined Everton. I think he's a phenomenal player. I think Everton got him at a right price. And, you know, the prospect of McCarthy and Ross Barkley together with a wise head like Gareth Barry behind, I think that's pretty delicious. I think Everton are really a team to watch.
Thanks very much indeed for your time, Gabriele. Nice to talk to you again.
My pleasure.
Well, that was Gabriele Marcotti. Just a few other things to wrap up, Alan. The point he makes about Everton is correct, isn't it? Lukaku on a season-long loan, Barry kept hold of Baines, McCarthy, as he says. Mm. I mean, they've done particularly well.
Yeah, and I think that there was also planning before Fellaini went to the players they wanted. Gareth Barry is an excellent signing. McCarthy, we all enjoyed watching him last year in a struggling Wigan side, so let's see what he can do. But Lukaku was the one. And they snatched him in the last minute from under the noses of West Brom and they got him. And it was a great bit of business. And they've still got some money in the bank.
And talking of West Bromwich Albion, Victor Anichebe joins from Everton. Stefan Sessegnon joins from Sunderland for a club record fee as well. The feeling was that Sessegnon wasn't the kind of character who would necessarily flourish under Di Canio, but may do very well under Steve Clarke.
Yeah, I mean, I was a bit surprised by that because I think Sessegnon's one of Sunderland's better players. They're struggling at the moment for goals and scoring goals, and he's the one player that could have done it, but he's had his ups and downs with Di Canio through the pre-season, and you know, they felt it was time to move on. I think he'd be a success at West Brom. I think it's a good signing for West Brom. I'm not too sure what's going on at Sunderland, if it was a good deal for them.
Well, more to come on that from Stephen Reid later in the show. And just a question about Palace. In the end, 16 signings this window. Now, we saw Queen's Park Rangers pay the price for signing too many players last season. Have Palace done something similar, or did they need to strengthen like this?
No, I'm quite impressed with what they've done, because as a newly promoted team, the manager sometimes becomes too loyal to the team that took him up. And I think that win against Sunderland at weekend, I think Ian Holloway came out and said, look, we're bringing players in. The rest of the squad's got to understand it. It's competition and it's all about the club. We've got to stay up. We'll do our best to stay up. And I like what he's done because he's brought players in that if they do get relegated, they can handle the contracts. And he's brought some experience in that if they do stay up, then they could stay there for another season. So I like the way they've gone about it. It's a totally different story to QPR. QPR brought in these multi-million pound deals and they couldn't handle it when they went down. This is different for Crystal Palace. It's been a clever bit of business. We'll have to see if it works. But I think Ian Holloway has decided that he needed to strengthen and he's been loyal to the people that took him up and he's put some competition in there.
I like Paul Lambert's style as well, having insinuated what, 2 or 3 days ago, it was done, nothing else to be done, and then Libor Kojak comes in, tall, 6'3", strong, centre-forward from Lazio. I saw someone describe him on Twitter as Ian Ormondroyd Light the other day, and he's got that about him, and that's the kind of player they need, isn't it?
Well, he's something different, but I think we're letting Darren Bent go to Fulham on a year's loan. He's got these three strikers, Weimann, Abong Lahore and Benteke, but if he loses one of them, he's got a problem. So he's strengthened in the front areas. And I think he can move Weimann into a different position. And it'd be quite interesting because I think if Weimann goes in behind Benteke as the other striker or behind the forward, they get a player from midfield who can score goals.
But all in all, to sum up, Everton, the team that's done the best business?
I think Everton have done well. We forgot about Tottenham because they've done it all so long ago. But I think overall, I like the look of what Liverpool's done. I think we can call it Brendan Rodgers' team now. Been in charge 12 months and I think he's turning it around, so now it's his team and they're top of the league. So I think there's been some real winners in this transfer window and I think Liverpool and possibly Everton have been two of them.
And Manchester City and Spurs, as you say, doing their business much, much earlier. Well, we'll be talking more about transfer deadline day and what's gone through and what hasn't throughout the show. But let's start our weekend review at a buoyant Anfield where Liverpool paid tribute to the late great Bill Shankly in style, continuing their flawless start to the season with a hard-fought 1-0 victory over rivals Manchester United. So, Alan, three games, three 1-0 wins, three Daniel Sturridge winners. Keep that going for the season, they'll be champions.
I'd be delighted. I just think that when you look at the summer, I think Liverpool probably will look back at that and think that they've come out on top in terms of the business they've done. And obviously keeping Suarez, but there's real competition there. And as I said earlier, I think we can start calling it Brendan Rodgers' team because they've had so much turmoil there in the last 3 or 4 years. You know, Roy Hodgson, Kenny Dalglish, and now Brendan, and lots of players coming and going. But I think this is his squad.
In what was an emotional week for the club, Brendan Rodgers and his players did their city proud on the pitch.
These are the big games that we wanted to be winning this year. We drew too many last year, and I think you see the togetherness and the spirit in the team. I think the initial challenge this year is to try and get into the top four and be in the conversation for that as long as we can. And I don't think we can look anything beyond that for a long time yet.
And just to emphasise, this is Liverpool's best start to a season for almost 20 years. And to discuss Sunday's occasion at Anfield in more depth, and it really was an occasion, I'm delighted to say we're joined on the line by the former Reds manager, Roy Evans. Thanks for joining us, Roy.
Yeah, morning. How you doing?
Yeah, really good, thank you. And before we talk about the game itself, I'm really interested to get your perspective on that. But a word on the atmosphere, Roy, at Anfield on Sunday. It was a 100th birthday tribute, of course, to Bill Shankly.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic. Obviously, what a great man he was. And without him, I don't think Liverpool would be where they are today and would have won all these things in the past. He started the whole thing and we had a big dinner last night with all the 1965 boys as a big tribute to him. And obviously, Bill's family was there and everything. He was a fantastic man, charismatic, Chairman Mao, if you like. The one thing he didn't know about, he knew what the fans were all about. He'd tell the players, you're playing for the fans. He would go outside and give them a couple of tickets if he had a few spare and things. There will never be another Bill Shankly. A lot of people have tried to emulate him over the years. There will never be a real Bill Shankly again, that's for sure.
I mean, we hear so many stories about him, Roy, of course, as you well know. Is he someone who's inspired you throughout your career?
Of course. I went there as a young lad and sort of stood next to him in the dressing room and obviously gave me my 3 or 4 games in the first team, to be fair. I mean, you talk with all these guys yesterday, like the 65 lads, Ian St. John and Ron Yates, Ian Callaghan, Roger Hunt. I mean, he was a magic, an inspiration for everybody. And I don't just think Liverpool supporters. I think football supporters in general, because he could say things which were outrageous. But he just loved the game of football. He loved it to be played in the right way and would have been 100 years yesterday. You have got to celebrate people like him because there's not many of them about.
There was a programme on last night on one of the TV stations which I taped and it was half hour of his quotes basically. And I can't wait to watch it today because they're still true today. Everything he was saying then is still true today.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, only half hour of his quotes and you've got another 24 hours to go on. He's one of those guys who can say things so charismatic about it. And he'd make you feel 10 foot tall, he can make you feel 2 inches tall. He had that ability. The main thing was that he just loved football. And I say he started this club off. Bob Paisley followed on, and Joe Fagan and people like that. But at the end of the day, this man started what was a fantastic spell for Liverpool. And the fans will never forget Bill Shankly, that's for sure.
Yeah, there was an interesting, terrific quote at the weekend coming from the editor of the Times newspaper in the UK, which said, Shankly gave us an ethos, a belief that we're part of something bigger than mere football. That was his real particular skill, wasn't it? Do you think the game would allow for someone like him these days, Roy? I mean, you've been involved in management, of course, much more recently. And Brian Clough's the person who's always put alongside Bill Shankly, isn't he? Would there be a space for someone like that these days, do you think?
There's always a space for somebody with the ability and with the type of thoughts of Bill Shankly. I mean, Jose Mourinho thinks he's very special. But I always look for difference in managers. I mean, these days, a lot of the managers go and they all do the same courses. None of them have the real own personalities. And at Bill's time, he said, we're not going to go and do any badges. We don't believe in what the FA says and this, that and the other. But at the end of the day, he stuck to what he thought. And everything he thought about the game was simplicity. Pass the ball to the nearest red shirt. He didn't mean that. He said, pass the ball to the nearest red shirt if there's nothing else on. And you believed everything he said. I mean, he said some outrageous things, but you actually believed it because that's the type of guy he was.
And just back to the match now, Roy. It's fitting, isn't it, that Liverpool, on that day of all days, would move to the top of the table with a win, which was a position that Bill Shankly was fairly used to being in.
Yeah, I think he would have been delighted that obviously his family was there and everything, and they came on the pitch, and for Liverpool to get a result against Man United was fantastic at the end of the day. To be fair, I mean, Liverpool have got three results, 3-1-0s, and they've played some good football part of the game, but they haven't really completed the whole game. It's been like sort of 45 minutes of good and sometimes 45 minutes of sitting back and letting the other teams come at them. And I don't think they've played their best stuff yet. The likes of Coutinho hasn't been fantastic yet. We saw a lot more of them last year. So you get 9 points and you haven't played at your best. I think that's great for Liverpool fans to think about. I mean, we don't want to get carried away. We don't want to start thinking like we're going to win this and we're going to win that. Just nice to get up there and to be top of the league after 3 games, whereas the previous season we had a disastrous start. And obviously then you struggle to play catch-up.
Yeah, another Liverpool great, of course. Alan Hansen always said that when you can win 1-0, when you're playing badly, that's a sign of a title-winning team. And the thing is that Liverpool fans will be getting excited, Roy, and I can hear in your voice that you are as well. But lovely to talk to you, and thanks so much for your memories and your time as well.
Thanks, guys.
Roy Evans, wasn't that terrific to hear that? When you hear him talk about Shankly, Alan, you just know you could sit and listen to him for hours talking about him, don't you?
And it's the same with all them Liverpool players. When they start talking about him, they've got so many stories. And I do think that perhaps the greatest manager we've seen since then, Alex Ferguson, I think he probably looked at that and copied him somewhat. And Bill Shankly ran Liverpool. He was the man in charge. He'd done everything. And Ferguson run Man United. He was the man in charge. And when you hear the goings-ons of the transfer window, you realise that perhaps the managers are not in charge of it all anymore.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And the man who now is in charge, of course, after Sir Alex Ferguson, is David Moyes. The defeat at Liverpool extended his poor record at Anfield. I think it's 13 attempts now to try and win there, and he still hasn't. But the former Everton manager was pleased with his team's performance.
We gave away a bad goal, with the exception of that. I thought we played well, probably the best we've played this season. Liverpool had very few opportunities. They had 2 free kicks from outside the box. I think Steven Gerrard had 1 shot. And then they had 1 from an injury time when Sterling raced away. So apart from that, Liverpool had no real play at all. So we gave the ball away. They had a half chance from it, which led to the corner and they scored from it.
First time since 2007 that Man United have failed to score in consecutive league games. And Robin van Persie had a strange old day, didn't he? Struggled to get into space, missed a couple of decent chances. I mean, nothing glaring, but probably should have done better.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that is the problem that Man United have got, is, no Rooney at the weekend. So with van Persie tied up and not playing as well and not getting his goals, who else is going to score goals for Man United? I think that's why they've been looking for this creative goal-scoring midfield player. The last Man United player to get into double figures was Paul Scholes in 2002. You know, so no one else has been chipping in, and I think that is a worry for Man U, that if Van Persie doesn't score and Rooney, there's no one else out there at the moment, and all the other top clubs have got a midfield player that gets double figures.
I think the creative, powerful midfield player they want is just signed for Real Madrid, hasn't he, potentially? But they do have Marouane Fellaini. We've already talked about him. Is he the answer to that particular
problem?
Well,
he does score goals if he's played in that way, and I think that's what David's bought him for, to play in midfield and go and support the front players. And also try and create one or two things, but he's shown at Everton that he can get into double figures most seasons.
Well, from one fierce rivalry to another now in the North London derby, where again the home team triumphed. Arsenal edged out Spurs 1-0 in a tightly contested encounter, a game that normally provides an absolute flood of goals. Finish 1-0. Olivier Giroud's really good finish in that first half. Were you surprised by how cagey it was, or is it a sort of sign of how the teams have changed a little, particularly Spurs?
Yeah, I think it is a sign, because I think that you can't get away from the fact that Bale was such an important part. I think the goals he made and the goals he scored, he was game changer. Without him and Lennon at the weekend as well, and Defoe's on the bench, them three last season terrorised defences away from home. They was really quick on the counter-attack, and I think out of all the dealings they've done, they've lost that a little bit now, Spurs. They look a bit one-paced at the moment. It's difficult to replace Gareth Bale, but I do think that, you know, it's a work in progress. I fancied Arsenal to win that. I think that they were more of a team in some respects, and I think Spurs is a work in progress.
Well, let's hear now from two of Arsenal's key men on Sunday, the in-form Aaron Ramsey, but first the goal scorer, Olivier Giroud.
Yeah, I used to do that that one at the training, so Theo knows me very well, and that's why I feel really, really good in the gym this year. I know my teammates and they know me.
I thought we had a tremendous game today. We worked ever so hard. You know, the big man up front started us off for us, and, you know, obviously we grabbed the goal in the first half and defended ever so well. I thought we deserved the win in the end.
A word on those two, Alan. Giroud, three goals in three games, like Daniel Sturridge, and Ramsey started superbly too.
Yeah, I think Ramsey especially must have looked at the pre-season and felt that last year passed him by a little bit, and he's got to make his mark this season, because there's all talk about new players coming into the Emirates. And I think Giroud hit the nail on the head there. He's been there a year. The players have got to know him a little bit more, and I like Giroud. I think his movement in the box is exceptional. Just lacks that yard of pace, and you know, I thought that they could have done a bit of business in that forward area. Perhaps they were trying and didn't get across the line.
After the defeat by Villa, it was all crisis, wasn't it? But once again, Wenger has produced a series of results that have really helped him out in terms of the way that the perception, if you like.
Well, took a lot of pressure off him as well, because after that first game against Villa, he had 60,000 fans telling him he didn't know what he was doing. If you can imagine Spurs going there last weekend and winning after spending all the money they've spent, can you imagine the reaction? So he's got the results right, and, you know, he's gone and done a bit of business, so perhaps the pressure's off him for now.
And just here's a stat for all Arsenal fans who might be a bit disgruntled. Since January, Arsenal have picked up more points than any other Barclays Premier League team. Mm. If the table went from January, they'd be top of it. Just a word about Ozil again. Big money, by miles the biggest money they've ever spent, breaking, I think it was Reyes was the previous record, just over 17 million. They paid over 42 for Ozil. Where do you see him fitting in? I mean, he's a traditional number 10, really, Ozil, isn't
well,
he?
Well, I think what's happening in the Barclays Premier League is that the top teams now are playing with his five-man midfield, and he's very fluent. He's seen it at Chelsea, where they interact and people move around. And Cazorla, Wiltshire, Walcott, Oxlade-Chamberlain, Ozil will fit in there perfectly. I think when he picks the ball up, the Arsenal fans will expect something to happen. Just that deep line forward who can see the opening and see the pass. So that's what I'm expecting from him, that he's going to create things and score some goals.
Well, let's hear the Spurs manager, Andre Villas-Boas' assessment of the match now.
It was always a competitive game with chances to both teams, but I think the game really changed in the second half. I think for Arsenal to finish with four fullbacks means something to us, to our domination. We kept on trying to get the equaliser. Drawing was never going to be enough. We wanted to win here, but I think they had that clinical ability in front of goal.
Spurs looked a little sluggish almost, didn't they, in the game? Is it the sense of new signings just not quite gelling yet? How does it work?
I think that's part of it. The fact, as I said earlier, they've seemed to have lost that real pace. Lennon on one side, Bale on the other, and Defoe up front. It's now changed. Lennon's out injured, Defoe can't get in the side, and Bale's gone. And they've brought in different players. I think Chadley on the left needs to come inside. Don't really go past his fullback. Soldado has to come off. He doesn't really want to go in behind people. But, you know, they've got lots of games coming up, Europa League, League Cup, whatever. So there is a chance now to integrate him fully into the squad. And we'll have to see Villas-Boas' man management skills, because I think he struggled with that at Chelsea. And he's going to have to do that at Spurs, because he's got so many players to deal with now.
Yeah, well, we shall see. Final word, I think, on that goes to you-know-who. Gareth Bale tweeted, "Thanks to both Southampton FC and Spurs official for helping me to reach this point in my career. Two very special clubs." He just joined another very special club as well. Well, coming up, we'll be speaking to West Brom defender Stephen Reid and hearing from Alan Pardew and Chris Hughton.
You're listening to the official Barclays Premier League podcast with Dave Farrar.
St James's Park breathed a huge sigh of relief on Saturday as a late wonder strike from midfielder Hatem Ben Arfa secured Newcastle's first win of the season against Fulham, also their first goal of the season, Alan, which has been a long time coming.
Yeah, you know, it seems to be normal that there's always pressure up at St James's Park for one reason or another. They seem to take one step forward and two steps back, some of the things they do, and it was a relief for everybody that they got the result. They deserved it as well. They were the better side and could have scored a few more.
Well, let's hear now from the Newcastle manager, Alan Pardew, on the match winner, Ben Arfa.
He's such a maverick. He's difficult to manage in terms of getting a structure in your team. It kind of goes to him and you're not actually sure what he's going to do. But one thing I do know is he's got exceptional talent. He opened up the game a couple of times and then he's hit the winner with an absolute pearl of a hit.
Yeah, Newcastle created a lot of chances, 24 attempts in the end. But you've already touched on it, but no transfer business this summer. Frustrating probably for Newcastle fans who were almost prepared to forgive a poor last season, weren't they? But they don't want another one like that.
No. If they don't get the results, then that pressure will be back on. You know, they didn't do the business that a lot of fans wanted, but I think Remy coming in, if he stays fit, could be a good signing. In all fairness, when I look at the squad, I don't think they're going to be in any trouble. I think that last year they got it wrong for all sorts of reasons, but I don't think they're going to be in any relegation trouble. I think that perhaps the Newcastle fans want to see them back up in that top five where they were a couple of years ago. So the expectation is there, but the squad they've got, they should be okay.
Yeah, and in fairness, there was transfer business done in January, wasn't there? Fairly significantly too, so maybe they feel that they've got enough. Stephen Taylor tweeted, great win today. Nice to see Remy out there in a black and white shirt. Going to be a top player for us. And Hatem Ben Arfa, what a strike, he says. As for Fulham, they created very little. It was a poor day at the office for them and indeed for Berbatov.
It seems the same old story that if they don't get their points at Craven Cottage, where are they going to get them? Away from home, their form has not been that good. And Berbatov just looked disinterested. I think that, you know, Darren Bent's gone in there. So he went up top at the weekend and you'd have thought it would have suited Berbatov to drift around and become this number 10 we're all talking about. You know, pick the ball up and try and work things. And but he gave the ball away continuously and his work rate was down to zero again. So, you know, perhaps he's not happy, but certainly Fulham need him firing because, you know, he's one of them inspirational players for them.
Yeah, keep calm and give me the ball and then I won't do anything with it. Another team relieved to get their first win on the board at the weekend were Norwich City, who overcame Southampton 1-0, courtesy of a superb second-half strike from one of their summer signings, Nathan Redmond. Here's manager Chris Hughton's thoughts on the 19-year-old who started off life at Carrow Road in style.
We know with young players it can be up and down, but he's a very level-headed young man. We've caught him at a good time. His form at the end of last season was very good and he's been good right through the pre-season period. What he's got to make sure to continue to do to his game. He has a wonderful offensive options, but he's working also very hard for the team. That's equally as important.
That looks like good business. 3.2 million from Birmingham. He's looked like a player for a season and a half already, hasn't he? And he looked like a player on Saturday.
And he's another one of those players that can play either side of, you know, either wing. And when he's on the left-hand side, like the weekend, he can cut inside and get his shot off, which is what he did for his goal. And he's an unknown quantity at the moment, so he might as well enjoy it because, let me tell you, the defenders will be looking at him and trying to work him out a little bit more. But a great performance at the weekend.
And as for Southampton, the defeat ended their unbeaten start to the season. But Pablo Osvaldo making his full debut. What do you make of him? I mean, he's a maverick, isn't he? Goal-scoring maverick.
Well, obviously, Pochettino wanted to bring some more players in. I was a bit surprised that Rodriguez was the one that, you know, was left out for him. But he wants competition up there and, you know, he can't just rely on one or two forwards. You need three or four. We'll have to see how he fits in. He looks a player that can fashion things and take chances, but he also looks a little bit of a loose cannon sometimes. We'll have to wait and see how he fits in.
Yeah, looking forward to Southampton against Spurs whenever that happens. Lamella and Osvaldo had a dressing room bust-up last season, so we'll see if they play against each other. Coming up, we'll be hearing from Paolo Di Canio, Michael Laudrup and Mark Hughes, but it's time now for our halftime tweets. Well, Liverpool's Daniel Sturridge celebrated his third winner of the season with a tweet. What a day. Happy birthday to me. Thank God for the goal and win. And Liverpool fan Umar tweeted back, Sturridge is the most humble footballer by far. He knows it's the fans that make clubs. Later that day, we spotted this from Arsenal midfielder Aaron Ramsey. Great result against Spurs and definitely the best atmosphere I've experienced at the Emirates. And he finished it by saying, Gooners. And Arsenal fan Clinton Lau tweeted, now that's what a derby should be like, on the edge of your seat for 95 minutes. Norwich City's Nathan Redmond, who we've spoken about, said after his winner against Southampton, thanks for the messages from the game yesterday. Happy with the 3 points and my first BPL goal. Bless. And Dwight Gayle, who is playing non-league football just over a year ago, scored his first top-flight goal for Palace on Sunday. And he said, one of the best feelings of my life. What a great win. The fans were unreal. Remember, you can keep up to date with everything that's going on in the Barclays Premier League by following at Barclays Footy on Twitter with the hashtag YouAreFootball. I'm here with Alan Kirbishley, a man who I doubt knows what a hashtag is. As we continue our look back at all the weekend's top flight action, next we head to Selhurst Park, where, as I said, Dwight Gayle helped Crystal Palace register their first points of the season in a 3-1 victory over Sunderland. And here's his manager, Ian Holloway.
I think he's a fantastic player. His movement's great, and I'm glad he's off the mark. He thoroughly deserves it. The lads have come back fighting and buzzing. And, you know, I thought, if you look at Shamak's effort, he wants to work for us, and he's not even fit yet, so... Obviously, I'm absolutely delighted for the boys. We thoroughly deserved it.
Well, great first win of the season. You can't help but be, you're smiling, you see. You can't help but be happy for him, can you?
No, and I think his enthusiasm comes through. What was stunning was the crowd, the atmosphere at Selhurst Park, and from the first minute, the crowd were up and down, jumping, and whenever the camera went on them, they was making an outrageous amount of noise and really did galvanise the team, I think.
It's definitely a day to forget, though, for Sunderland. I mean, what a contrast between the two. We'll hear in a second, but what a day to forget for them and their manager, Paolo Di Canio, who was not happy with his players afterwards.
This game was crucial for us, for everybody. If we don't start thinking that every ball, every challenge can be crucial for the destiny, you know, of our match, that can be a problem, because it's not possible. After our goal, we were in top. How we did this is absolutely poor.
It's early, isn't it, to be talking like that about your players in public?
You know, I had Paolo for a year at Charlton, and I know how intense he is, but, you know, when you listen to him now, you know, everything seems to be a crisis or a drama when they get beat, and when they win, he's sliding along the touchline in celebration. And I think he's got to learn that you don't have the lows too low and the highs too high, and I think he's putting a bit of pressure on that team. He's made so many changes, too many in my eyes, to the squad. You know, Spurs have brought lots of players in, but I think the substance is there. They can handle that. I think that Sunderland, who just staved off relegation last year, have had so many changes, and it's a work in progress. It's a big game, the next one that they come up. I think they've got Arsenal at home, and that's going to be an enormous game.
He's added Barini and De Sena, two more Italian players into the squad.
Perhaps bringing two players in that he can converse with quite easily and to try and get the message across. But we were surprised when Mignolet went, but even more surprised that Sessegnon's gone.
Yeah, well, difficult times ahead maybe for Sunderland. Two other teams without a win this season came head-to-head at the Hawthorns on Sunday. It was Swansea who left with the spoils, beating a pretty hapless West Brom side 2-0. We can hear from a very satisfied Swansea manager, Michael Laudrup.
First 3 points after two very difficult games against Manchester United and Tottenham. Very good performance, away win, clean sheet. So, yeah, it was a complete day. And we dominated against a team that I call from our league, West Brom and us. We are there in the same boat. But even if I think we did quite well, they are very, very strong side.
Well, a deserved win for Michael Laudrup's team. Ben Davis, Pablo Hernandez with the goals. And that felt like them getting back on track, didn't it? Because it was a shaky start to the season.
A difficult start as well. You know, home to Man United and away to Spurs. And we was wondering after last year, you know, were they going to struggle? But I think he's got a decent squad there, Michael Laudrup. They thoroughly deserved the result. And as he said, it was against a team that perhaps is in the same league as him at the moment. And it was a big 3 points.
And a deadline day signing for them, the Spanish under-21 striker Alvaro Vazquez from Getafe. As for West Brom, they sit at the bottom of the table with just a single point from their first 3 matches. But there's real reason for optimism after the Baggies managed to do some great business in the final few hours of the transfer window. To discuss deadline day and their start to the season, the West Brom fullback Stephen Reid joins us. Let's start with transfer deadline day, Stephen, and the two strikers who've been brought to the Hawthorns. Stefan Sessegnon from Sunderland for a club record three of over £6.5 million, and Victor Anichebe from Everton for a fee rising to £6 million, and with no goals in your first 3 games, presumably the kind of players that you need.
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at the first few games and, you know, some of the back end of last season, it's an area where we've been struggling a little bit to get goals and to create chances, especially the start of this season. So it's obviously an area where the gaffers seem fit to strengthen. We've kept Shane as well, so it looks like we've done some good business, and hopefully going forward now we can start creating a bit more and start getting on the score sheet sooner rather than later.
And you managed to keep Shane long, Stephen, and although Chelsea striker Romelu Lukaku looked like he was coming back to you, didn't he, after his loan spell last season, he ended up at Everton. Is he one that just sort of got away?
Yeah, maybe. I think 17 league goals last season, so it's always going to be difficult to try and replace that. and we've kept Shane. So, yeah, like I say, I think Longley will be a great asset going forward between now and the rest of the season. So, yeah, I think we've splashed a bit of money, which has not been like us in recent years. So looks like we've done some good business and hopefully we can get on the score sheet and start winning some games.
And of course, we want an insight from you as well. What's it like being a player in these transfer windows? It must be nerve-wracking knowing that, you know, you wake up in the morning and then at the end of the day, you could end up absolutely anywhere.
Yeah, that's right. I think my days of worrying about that have long gone. But for the players involved, it obviously can be an unsettling time. If you're getting a transfer, you're not sure where that might be. You've got to settle quickly. The family have got to settle quickly and you've got to get on and play football. Sometimes strange that it all happens in the last day when you've got 2 or 3 months to get these things sorted and it ends up being a mad scramble with a couple of hours to go to see whether the deals get done. So especially the big names and the big money, like we've seen yesterday, Gareth Bale, there's going to be an immense amount of pressure on him now to produce after that massive transfer fee. But I'm sure a player of his quality is going to be fine in settling in and I'm sure he's going to do the business for Madrid.
And let's speak briefly, and I'll keep it brief, don't worry about that, 2-0 defeat to Swansea at the weekend. It must have been a match that you felt you could have won.
Yeah, I think so. I think at home you feel that you can win any game against any of the teams in the Premier League. It's not happened. It's been a disappointing start and disappointing not to get on the score sheet at the moment as well. So hopefully we can kick on between now and the next few games.
Now, another story that's been sort of bubbling around at West Brom, Nicolas Anelka came back into the team, didn't he, after compassionate leave and looked really lively. What's he like to have around the training ground?
Got an aura about him. You can see the younger lads, especially when he walks through the building in the gym, they're in awe of his presence, really. So it's great to have that type of player in and around the place after the last couple of weeks that just get focused. And Anelka especially, there's going to be a bit of pressure on him this season to produce for us. And seeing the clubs he's played for in the past, we hope that he can get on the score sheet and start creating chances as well.
And on a personal note, Stephen, you must have been pleased to have signed a one-year deal at West Brom at the end of last season. Are you over your injury problems now?
Yeah, at the minute, just getting back from a slight calf strain. I'm hoping to be fit for Fulham a week on Saturday. So, yeah, obviously delighted to get that sorted over the summer. Dragged on for a little while and at times I wasn't sure where my future was lying, but delighted to get it done. Delighted to have another year in the Premier League and hopefully can contribute this season to hopefully what will be another good season for us.
Well, thanks for your time, Stephen, and all the best for the rest of the season.
No problem at all.
Yeah, nice to hear from Stephen there. Thanks to him for his time. Another surprise away win at Upton Park, where Stoke continued their good form under new manager Mark Hughes to make it 2 wins out of 2, courtesy of forgotten man Jermaine Pennant.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was great strike and a good way to win the game, in fairness. I thought we were excellent today in terms of the control of the game, not allowing West Ham any real clear-cut chances in the whole 90 minutes, and I just thought we were able to get the ball down and pass and move and create problems. Probably we lacked that cutting edge in terms of the final ball, but that will come. But in terms of general play, I thought it was nigh on perfect and away performance from us.
My favourite tweet of the weekend's coming up in a second, so stay tuned for that. But a great win for Mark Hughes and a couple of good substitutions. And hands up if you realise Jermaine Pennant was still there.
It's an interesting story, wasn't it? Because I think he was released by Tony Pulis or at the end of the season. And when Mark Hughes took over the job, he brought him back. And he got him 3 points at the weekend.
And have you noticed a marked difference in their style under Mark Hughes? The fans are making quite a big deal of it, aren't they? It's quite fun, actually, at Stoke. They're playing like Brazil now, aren't they?
Absolutely, and they're singing that out as well. I feel a bit sorry for Tony Pulis because obviously he had a brand of football and it was successful. It got Stoke where they are today. And it seems now that, you know, they're passing it about a little bit more, he's getting criticised for what he's achieved there. Well, if he hadn't done what he'd done, they might not be there. But, you know, Mark Hughes has gone in there and he's trying to change their style and it was noticeable at Upton Park. They did pass the ball. They knocked it around really well and it was a really flat performance from West Ham, who had started off very well. Great win against Cardiff and the draw up at Newcastle. And I think the West Ham fans probably went into the game on Saturday thinking they was going to win that and it was going to be a comfortable game and Stoke had other ideas.
Well, for those of you who think that Stoke's style has changed significantly and they're starting to pass the ball around, Robert Hoot tweeted at the weekend, smash, boom, bang, wallop, first 3 points of the season done, hashtag long throw. There you go. I think he might have been being ironic, but it's good stuff from him. And West Ham, briefly, Andy Carroll will provide them with a bit more, won't he, when he's back?
Well, yeah, I think that they spent all their money on Carroll and Downing this season, so I think Sam is expecting that Downing and Jarvis will supply the balls into the box, Carroll will be on the end of it, and Kevin Nolan will pick up any knockdowns, and that's where their goals are going to come from.
So 2 wins out of 3 for Stoke is a record shared by Manchester City, who saw off Hull 2-0 at the Etihad in a somewhat uninspiring performance. Alan, on paper it looked like a comfortable home win, but if you watched it, my goodness, it was anything but.
Without Vincent Kompany at the back, they looked a bit fragile there. It was a really good performance from Hull, but never got anything from the game. And I think it's welcome to the Barclays Premier League for Pellegrini, because, you know, in Spain, I don't think the two newly promoted sides like Cardiff and Hull put up such a game as they did against Man City. So I think he knows now how competitive the Barclays Premier League is.
Although his old team, Villarreal, newly promoted this year, 3 wins out of 3. So it can happen in Spain.
Perhaps not against the top teams, though.
It's a fair point. Sorry, I was being picky. But the Spanish striker Álvaro Negredo came off the bench to score City's first goal on Saturday. And here is the manager, Manuel Pellegrini, on his new £16 million signing.
He played some minutes the first game against Newcastle, and he scored a goal. It was a legal goal, but it was not valid. The second game, he also played some minutes and he scored a goal. And today he plays 45 minutes, he scored one goal more. I know how good striker is Álvaro. I think that with Álvaro and with Edin, we have very good 2 strikers, and we need both of them.
Yeah, they looked a better side with Negredo in it, didn't they? He gives them a bit of life and very good finisher, as we knew before he arrived.
He's fantastic in the air. He sort of hangs, doesn't he? And, you know, when the ball came across from Zabaleta, there was only going to be one outcome, that he was going to be on the end of it. It was a great goal. But, you know, the first game of the season against Newcastle, everyone was raving about Dzeko because he looked slimmed down, he looked full of energy and enthusiasm. So you need them strikers. One of them's got to play with Aguero, and it's that competition you need.
Yeah, and they've added Martin De Michelis from Atletico Madrid as well. It's someone that Pellegrini knows particularly well, and they needed cover.
Yeah, because I think the way that Kompany went off, he did look sore, and it looks like not a couple of weeks, but it may be months with that injury. And, you know, I think that was a little bit short there, because Natasic has been out injured and they let Toure go. So it leaves them with just Julian Lescott. So they needed to do something, and they acted very quickly.
Well, as for Hull, it was a hugely encouraging performance. They can count themselves very unlucky to leave the Etihad with nothing. Here's their proud manager, Steve Bruce.
We're going to be rightly disappointed at the scoreline, but immensely pleased at the way we've played and the way we've took them on, basically. I mean, we couldn't have asked for anything more. We just were Achilles' heelers even last year in the Championship. Can we score enough? Certainly, we've got really, really good players, and we've added to that. And you can see why we've come out of the Championship with some of the football we played, but we need to score.
There were periods when Hull tore City apart, and Shawnee Aluko missed that one-on-one. I mean, he seemed certain to score, didn't he? And how different it would have been if he had.
Yeah, no matter what team it is, when you're presented with a chance like that at the Etihad, you've got to take it, because you know what a difficult game it's going to be. But look at the start they've had, away to Chelsea, away to Man City. So it was vital they got them 3 points against Norwich in their home game. So I think Steve will be sitting back now thinking, you know what, 3 points from them 3 games, I'll take that. But it's now when it resumes in a couple of weeks' time that they can get their heads down and try and pick up some more points.
Yeah, but the newly promoted side's looking pretty good at the moment. It's going to be interesting. Some more established names under threat, maybe. And talking of newly promoted clubs, we round off our look back at the weekend's fixtures with a team that beat Manchester City last week. New boys Cardiff held Everton to a 0-0 draw in South Wales on Saturday. Everton, one of only 3 teams still unbeaten, but still no win for Roberto Martinez. We'll talk about them first and then a little bit about Cardiff.
Yeah, I think that new manager's gone in there. David Moyes had been there for so long, and they had a style of play, and he's tried to implement what he wants, Martinez, and I think they've been quite unlucky that they haven't picked up a 3 points somewhere. And they'll be okay, Everton, and especially with the business they've done. But then going back to Cardiff, you know, fantastic result against Man City, and then following that up with another point, you know, they'll be delighted with their start so far. And I like the way they've gone about it. They broke their transfer record 3 or 4 times, I think. Perhaps gone a different route to what Crystal Palace have tried and what Hull have tried. And, you know, let's hope it pays dividends. But they do look a very young, athletic side, and they've got that backing of that fantastic crowd, because that atmosphere against Man City was brilliant. And if they can generate that sort of thing, the fans, it'll hold them in good stead.
Yeah, well, their position in the table may not end up being quite as high as their chairman's trousers, but they'll probably be okay in the end. And Peter Odemwingie has arrived as well. No Barclays Premier League matches this weekend due to international World Cup qualifiers taking place. It's a key weekend as well. So which Barclays Premier League players are you most looking forward to seeing in action for their countries? And you can't count Gareth Bale for Wales.
No.
Because he is no longer.
He's gone. I think for England's sake, I'm a bit concerned about Daniel Sturridge a little bit, because he just seems to have this niggling thigh injury, and, you know, it's holding him back a little bit. But we do need him now that Wayne Rooney's out. So I'm looking forward to Daniel Sturridge, because I just think he's on fire at the moment. And Ozil, we all now we know he's coming to the Barclays Premier League, we'll all be looking out for his performance for Germany.
And just tweet us your thoughts as well, won't you, on what you're looking forward to this weekend, what you're looking forward to throughout the rest of the season, and what you made of that transfer window. At Barclays Footy is the place to do all of that. Now, that's just about it for this week. My thanks to Alan for his company. Before we go, though, have a try at this week's trivia teaser. Mesut Ozil will become the seventh German player to feature for Arsenal in the Barclays Premier League when he makes his debut in a couple of weeks. Can you name the six German players before him to have appeared for the Gunners? The six German players before him to have appeared for the Gunners. You might find one or two in the current team. If you think you know the answer, log on to the Barclays Football Facebook page and tell us what you think. We'll post the correct answers on the site later in the week. And remember as well, you can tweet us throughout the week at Barclays Footy with your footballing thoughts wherever you are in the world. Tony Cascarino and Paddy Barclay will be with us next week as we look back on what's been an intriguing first 3 weeks of the season so far. Make sure you join us for that. But until then, from Alan Kirbishley and from me, Dave Farah, bye-bye.
You've been listening to the official podcast of the Barclays Premier League, brought to you by Barclays.